At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Premier, thanks so much for joining us. Always nice to chat.
Oh, my pleasure, Shay. And you're my first year-end interview. And
really?
I'm jet-lagged, so go easy on me.
Oh, of course. You know what I was saying earlier today? It's kind of these year-end ones are they're a little more laid back. I look forward to them. We don't have to get as contentious around the issues as we might at other times. You know how it works. But I want to ask you, COP28, you went over to Dubai with a sizable delegation of about 100 Albertans. What's your takeaway? We saw the statement that came out. You and your minister sort of taking a victory lap and thinking you'd won some concessions along with other petrol states and the rest. What's your takeaway from what happened in Dubai over the last couple of weeks?
I have to tell you, I can't believe that Alberta and Saskatchewan have allowed for the federal government to represent us at these tables without us being there. There's no way that I would allow that in future. When they get down to these negotiations, look at what happened. Stephen Guilbeault was running around announcing things that aren't even in his jurisdiction, not allowing us in advance to know what they were, asking us to sign NDA agreements. And he announced an emissions cap on oil and gas, a methane emissions cap, as well as a new program to subsidize the farmers for reducing the methane emissions from cow belches. I mean, these are the kind of things that cooperative federalism should require, that we go in with a common strategy. And I can tell you, Guilbeault was working against us at every point. He would have been more than happy to see language that would have required a phase out completely of oil and natural gas. And I can tell you, I think it's because there were a lot of allies at the provincial level, other subnational governments, in addition to those who are producing these products. We know that we can reduce emissions dramatically with carbon capture, utilization and storage, hydrogen, ammonia, and that's the direction that we need to go. So I look at it that we didn't win a full victory against Ottawa, but what an absolute shame that they were working against our interests while we were there. But I think we had some good allies. And I think that we've got a plan that we'll be able to work forward to with carbon neutrality by 2050.
You know, and working against Alberta Pines, and I wanted to ask you about a couple of the things that have come up. And I know the emissions cap and it's some call it a production cap. I know that's a major one for sure. But, you know, you talk about the cattle and the cow belches, and that made a lot of headlines this week. Your government's been working on that for a long, long time. You talk about methane reductions within the province of Alberta. Your own documents have 75% by 2014. So they're not that out of step with the federal government. I mean, isn't there some common ground there? I mean, not all of it is diametrically opposed to what's already happening in Alberta.
Yeah, and I guess there could be common ground as long as they worked with us and deferred to us and acknowledged that we are making progress, like they do with British Columbia, for instance. British Columbia has had its own carbon tax, and it's a carve-out from the federal policy, and so they're able to operate it independently. They're wanting to layer on top of all of the things that we already have that are working. And I'm telling you, I think it's going to be another cash grab, that what they're looking at doing is taxing our industry to generate revenues so that they can spend it in Eastern Canada. It's the same old story that we've seen over and over again, and that's part of the reason we're putting a hard line on this. When I started looking at some of the comments that Jonathan Wilkinson, the Natural Resources Minister, was making, talking about how emissions reduction and increasing production is incompatible, that says to me 100% what they're doing is a production cap. They're trying to dress it up in different language, but it's a production cap. There is no room in the Constitution for the federal government to come in, identify a particular industry and propose a particular policy like this. So we can work with them on the broad-based approach of reducing overall emissions, but they can't come in here sneakily trying to put through a policy that they just simply don't have the constitutional right to do. So we're going to fight them on that every step of the way.
How can they at the same time be, you know, stealing the resource revenue to spend it in Eastern Canada, and as they always have, and wanting that tax revenue to give away in Eastern Canada, and at the same time try and destroy the industry? They're working at cross purposes. How do they make sense?
Well, I can tell you, this is the question that we have for them. We know that the kind of emissions cap that they were proposing of a 42% reduction by 2030, that would reduce the amount of barrels we're able to produce by 1.3 million barrels per day. If you look at even the current value of about $50 on Western Canada Select, that would deprive us of $6.5 billion worth of revenue. Meanwhile, they want to charge our energy industry $50 per ton for their emissions. So that's how they're doing it. They're continuing to constrict our ability to produce wealth here, but they're going to be taking more off the top if their emissions cap goes ahead. So you bet. They have a chaotic, incoherent policy. Our policy is let's continue production, let's reduce emissions, let's work together, and let's make sure that our friends and allies have the energy that they need. And I think that is, you're going to see that we'll have to continue that fight over the coming years.
The work together piece there. Forgive me if I don't see a lot of that. Some of the language that you've been using to describe Stephen Guilbeault over the past 24 days, I don't think there's a lot of room for cooperation and collaboration. You've called him treacherous. You just called him sneaky. What is the end? What if this all comes to bear, let's say a year from now, what's the relationship between Daniel Smith and the Liberal government in Ottawa look like? I mean, have you abandoned all hope of a collaborative approach? I know behind the scenes there's lots of things that are working. I mean, you showed up with Chrystia Freeland at an announcement for Dow Chemicals a couple of weeks ago. So there are things happening, but ultimately, what's the goal?
Well, I hope they fire Stephen Guilbeault. I mean, he's demonstrated that he doesn't follow the law, doesn't listen to the courts, doesn't follow the Constitution. He shows up at these international meetings wanting to brag to his friends that he's doing more than anybody else. And he's creating real disruption in this country. And I'll be very clear with the Prime Minister that I think we can reset our relationship, but we need a new Environment Minister. I actually get along very well with François-Philippe Champagne. He sat next to me at one of the dinners that we were at. He's worked with us collaboratively on everything from Air Products to Dow Chemical to De Havilland. And I think he understands. I've not met a minister at the federal level who is such a champion of every region and every project as Champagne is. And I wish more of that spirit imbued the federal Liberals, because by taking this good cop, bad cop approach, I think you're creating a real and unnecessary division. So I will work with every minister who I think puts Alberta's interests first along the lines that I've seen with Champagne. But I can tell you, so Guilbeault does not. He's working against our interests, and I'm going to call him out for it every step of the way.
Aside from the Ottawa issue, let's bring it closer to home here in Alberta and the issues that I hear about all the time. And I know people have taken up with you personally on your show. First and foremost is healthcare and the situation that we're dealing with right now. You promised to get to work on this. This was a major part of your campaign. You famously said, give us 90 days. It's going to be rocky for 90 days. And you were hoping for some patience. And that was about 390 days ago now. And it sounds like things are worse now than they were then. Swing and a miss. Where are we with healthcare?
We made some great progress in those first few months. We reduced the amount of wait time in emergency rooms by 17%. We were reducing the amount of surgical waits by 1,000 a month. We were also eliminated red alerts. And then the election happened, and we came back, and we found that things had regressed. And one of the things I'm greatly disappointed about is one of the mandates that I gave to Alberta Health Services is we know, like clockwork, every year we get into a fall respiratory virus season. We need to increase ICU capacity. We need to make sure that we've got acute care capacity. And once again, they failed. You have to remember, I've been watching this very closely, because back in April of 2020, we had 295 acute care beds, and there was a plan to increase it to 1,000. Well, where are we today? 223 acute care or ICU beds. And that's the real problem, is that we have the ability to manage patients when they come in, but we have a healthcare system that continues to underperform. And so we've made some new changes, and I'm not going to take no for an answer, because we need to make sure that we get our ICU capacity up. We have to have enough acute care beds to ensure that we've got places for people with our growing population. We need to eliminate surgical backlogs. We also need to make sure that we're not causing our ambulances and our highly trained paramedics to sit on park for hours and hours on end. And we have to make sure everyone has a family practitioner. So those are the non-negotiables for me. And I think people should now see that I'm serious about it. We eliminated the original Alberta Health Services Board. I put in an official administrator. We didn't make enough progress. We've got a new board in place. We've got a new chair. We've got a a new CEO, and we're going to make real progress. We have to.
Yeah, I would agree. And you know, with all due respect, I think if there's a mom or a dad sitting at the Stollery right now with their kid and they're on hour 8 to get in to see a doc, they don't care. They don't want to know about progress that's going to happen in the next 2-3 years. And some of the timelines on some of the changes are a couple of years. They need help now. So what's being done to try and alleviate what doctors have reached out to me multiple times in the past week saying, we're at a crisis here. We need help. We're on our knees here.
Yep. One of the things is we've got to make sure that everyone has a family practitioner. It's why we are creating a program to give more dollars to doctors to take on more patients. We're also allowing nurse practitioners to establish their own practices. That's got to be number one, because that's one of the ways that we can reduce the pressure on the emergency rooms, is if everybody has access to a primary care practitioner when their kid has a fever or they need to be able to get some medical advice. So that has already been announced and will be rolling out. And then we are also focusing Alberta Health Services. Think of Alberta Health Services. It should be Alberta Hospital Services. They run 106 facilities for us. They should be running the very best acute care and hospital services anywhere in the country. And so that's part of the reason for the refocusing. In addition, continuing care. One of the pressures that we have in hospital is a number of people awaiting placement in long-term care. That's going to have a separate focus under our continuing care plan. I've recruited Jason Nixon to see what we can do to make sure that we're filling those beds. And that will allow, once again, for us to have more capacity on the acute care side. So those are the three main pillars. Here's what I would say. We have watched this system deteriorate ever since the Single Health Super Board came in 2008.
Yeah.
And we've watched premier after premier, health minister after health minister, just defer, say there's nothing we can do, give them more money.
Yep.
We trust AHS. And I've said, no, I don't. I'm tired of the snow job. I'm tired of being told, just trust us, we got this, when we don't. The more money we give, the worse the performance. So I would say I wished I'd been able to make a lot more enduring progress in the first year. We'll try a bunch of things, and we're going to make it work. We have to. It's the number one cost item that taxpayers are paying for. They deserve to have the very best system, and we have to deliver it.
Another issue, speaking of cost, that I hear about all the time is cost of living. And we had a story yesterday, actually, where in some ways it was being characterized as the Alberta advantage is disappearing. StatsCan, just last week, coming out with their basic measure of, you know, this is what making a living costs. You know, how much is the cost of a good living in Canada? Calgary is now the most expensive city in Canada. Edmonton is number 4, and they're within $500 of each other. And in the middle is Toronto and Vancouver, which we have always thought, and indeed, we've campaigned in those markets saying, hey, it's so much better in Alberta. It's not. The basic cost of living has now surpassed those cities when you talk about Calgary, and it's knocking on the door in Edmonton. We've got housing costs soaring, insurance rates are higher, utility rates are higher. What's going on, and how concerned are you that Alberta advantage appears to be eroding?
Oh, electricity is the biggest problem that we have right now. When I saw that electricity was going up to 32 cents a kilowatt hour, clear sign that the market's broken, the system's broken. So my electricity and affordabilities minister, Nathan Newdorf, is in the process of getting recommendations for how we're going to address that. And one of the things I saw, he spoke to the chamber this week, the changes that he will make will get our electricity prices down below 10 cents a kilowatt hour in an enduring way. And that's going to make a huge difference for people on cost of living. And it's the past year has been a real exposure of what happens when we phased out coal too early without a plan for how we were going to make sure we had baseload on stream to replace it. So it's a problem I inherited, but we have to address it, and we'll have more detail on that in the next couple of months. In addition, insurance. We used to be the market where people would come from elsewhere saying, yeah, oh, I'm so glad I'm here because my insurance rates are lower. When was the last time you heard that? We haven't. So we did an interim measure, because I think what people want to see is that if I've got a good driving record and I haven't been in an accident and I haven't gotten tickets, then my insurance rates shouldn't go up. So that was the edict that we gave to the insurance companies, and we're still working with them to find a way to make sure that those rates come down in a long-term way. But that's another system that's broken. I don't think we have all the answers yet, but we have, we're in the process still of trying to figure that out. And we're hoping that this change that we made will give our good drivers a bit of an alleviation in the new year, but there's more work that needs to be done there for sure. When it comes to rents, We have a Jason Nixon has been working with Rick McIver to see what we could do to accelerate the construction of new homes, accelerate the construction of rental properties, because that's the solution, is that the we have to be able to keep up with growth. And when I hear proposals like I have from a Calgary council member saying, hey, just help us out with this transportation project and that one, and we would be able to increase housing starts by 20,000. I heard another story from a council member in Edmonton along those same lines. Those are the things that we're looking for, is how can we strategically invest with our partners at the municipal level and make sure that that construction begins. We're doing an inventory right now of all of the properties that we own. Is there a way that we can give low-cost land to developers so that we can develop more affordable rental housing? Is there a way that we can partner with our municipalities so that we can provide an education property tax reprieve for those homes that are going to be built so that they can be more affordable? So we have a whole series of things that we're working on, but those are the three things that I know are really creating a pinch, and we've got to make sure that we're working together to make sure that the housing comes on stream.
What's the timeline? I know people are listening and thinking, holy cow, but I got my bill just arrived. I'm taking a look at my electricity bill. What's the timeline on here? I mean, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, but how long do we need to wait?
Electricity is, we've got three major projects that are coming into completion and on stream by mid next year, adding 2,700 megawatts of natural gas power to the grid. So we're talking about sort of a 6 month period.
Okay.
And they've already come down. They came down from 32 cents a kilowatt hour. I think they're at 16 cents a kilowatt hour, too high, but we're heading in the right direction there. With insurance, again, we don't want to wait forever with the insurance companies on coming up with some solutions. I think that my finance minister asked for an extra 6 months for us to figure out some of the strategies that work, so by mid next year. And when it comes to the rental housing, that's a little more of a long-term option, unfortunately. But I think that you see everybody is gripped with this, federal government, municipal governments, and our major cities. And we want to make sure that we're doing whatever we can to support the construction of private sector housing.
One of the things you did as an immediate remedy for cost of living was the gas tax. Now, price of gas has come down quite nicely. It's you can get it for under a buck in some places right now in Alberta. What's the future of that? January 1st, that's supposed to come back into effect, correct? Or do I have that wrong?
Here's the deal that we had with Albertans, that when we're making a lot of money from resource revenues, we're going to make sure that we are reducing the cost on them from the fuel tax. And so the program we have in place is when oil and gas is over $90, there will be no fuel tax. When it's under $80, and we're talking about West Texas Intermediate, then the tax comes back. As you've seen, we've had a lot of uncertainty around our oil prices. I think that they dip below $70, coming back a little bit. But we have to make sure that we're managing our revenues for the long term. I can tell you, my finance minister is gravely concerned that with these softening prices, we have more people coming into the province. We need to build more schools, more hospitals. We need to make sure that we're hiring enough doctors, nurses, teachers. And we can't keep on cutting our long-term dependable revenue sources. So because oil is now below $80, we figured that this was the time for us to return to that program. But if it goes back up to 90, then we'll take it off again. We've made that program permanent, so people will be able to get that break depending on what our oil prices are. The biggest thing we need to do is get the federal government to stop levying increasing taxes on us. Not only do they have the fuel tax, but they also have the carbon tax. We've been asking the NDP to work with us to make that a condition of the federal government, or the federal NDP's continued support of the NDP or of the Liberals, and they've refused to do that. We asked them to join us in asking for a carbon tax reprieve on home heating. They refused to do that too. So I would say that this is the frustrating part that we have, is that we've got a federal government that continues to make life more unaffordable for people, and we've got to address this at the federal level. We're going to continue putting pressure on them.
Addressing things at the federal level, I did want to ask you, where are we on the whole prospect of an Alberta pension plan? Was that dip a toe in the water? It's too cold. Let's abandon this. I mean, are we done with that exercise, or could that come back at another time?
We are a bit worried that the federal government is going to interfere in an independent process of their chief actuary to give us an assessment of what the transfer dollars should be. I mean, we showed our work, we put the Life Work report about how much we have overpaid year after year, compounded with interest over that period of time, what that amount was. It was $334 billion. That's the formula right in the Act. So they've disputed that, and we said, okay, come back to us and tell us what it is. So the chief actuary has said that they're going to, but we have to make sure that that is done with what the actual legislation says. So my finance minister is in Ottawa right now. There's going to be a meeting of the finance ministers tomorrow. We are trying to get carbon tax reprieve on the agenda as well, but we're going to continue watching to see the time frame for when these dollar figures will come back. I hope it doesn't take too long. We're hoping it takes months, not years, because people need the certainty.
Mm-hmm.
And if we have a huge dispute, we need to be able to go to the court to be able to resolve it, and then people will know, and we'll see whether or not there's an appetite for a vote.
You mentioned that dollar figure. I mean, put a likelihood on that. I'd say zero. What would you say that number is realistic?
I'd rather wait and see what assumptions they're making. I mean, the formula is the formula. It was put in there by Ontario because Ontario wanted to reserve the right to one day start their own plan. And so, and we hired Life Work, which was originally Morneau Chappell. I wouldn't have thought that was a group, not only because of their experience and their profile, but also because of their alignment with the federal Liberals. We tried to find somebody as independent as possible to give us our assessment. The fact that the federal government hasn't come back with a counter-assessment, we'll wait and see what they do, and then we'll have to make sure that we have that conversation with the public. We'll be very open and transparent about it. And if the appetite isn't there, as I said, we won't have a referendum. If the appetite is there, then we will.
So we're heading into the final days of 2023. What's that look like for Danielle Smith? I mean, you've got this public profile. Do you pull back? I mean, you're everywhere. You're zooming into your radio program from Dubai. When do you start to sort of say, okay, it's holiday time? And what does that look like in your world?
Well, not this week and not next week. I've got a bunch of year-end interviews that I need to do. And then I have, I think, three major announcements that I'll be at a podium for next week. So you'll have to stay tuned on those. I've got to do a check-in with my ministers to make sure that there isn't anything that we need to set up for announcement in January. But I love Christmas time. So I've got my parents that we normally go for a Christmas dinner at, my husband and his son. I think that we'll end up having a family dinner there. We've got some dear friends as well that we normally see over the course of the break. So we'll have the ability to do a little bit of balance on that, probably pretty close to between Christmas and New Year.
Well, I wish you all the best of the season, and thank you for always being available and jumping on the air with us. And we'll chat in 2024.
You got it. Thanks, Shay.
Canada may be known for its landscapes and friendly people, but beneath the surface lies a darker side of crime, history, and the paranormal. Since 2017, the award-winning Dark Poutine podcast has explored the shadowy corners of the Great White North and beyond, delivering chilling tales from a uniquely Canadian perspective. Hosted by Mike Brown and Matthew Stockton, with over 300 episodes and fresh releases every Monday, Dark Poutine is your weekly ticket to the creepier side of Canada. Listen to Dark Poutine on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.